wonderful Wizard of Oz. You'll find he is a wizard of wiz, if ever a wiz there was. If ever, oh, ever a wiz there was, the Wizard of Oz is one because of the wonderful things he does.
Does that put a smile on your face? Well, I've got one on mine. But is there more to the Wizard of Oz than meets our eye or ear? Our next guest thinks so. We're going to look at this beloved film in a different way, looking for wisdom and insight. Hi, I am Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Peter Gazzardi. He has worked in publishing for more than 40 years as an independent editor and writer. Some of the books he has edited include Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time, Deepak Chopra's Ageless Body, and Douglas Adams' Mostly Harmless. His latest book is called Emeralds of Oz, Life Lessons from Over the Rainbow. Do you remember watching the movie as a kid? What lessons did you take away from it? Well, we'd like you to be part of our discussion, so give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Peter. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Jill. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, were you one of the ones, one of us that waited all year to see The Wizard of Oz on TV?
I did indeed. Yes, I was born in the early. I was born in 1950. I lived in Italy for the first part of my childhood, but the first thing I did when I came back was kind of revel in American television.
Ah.
and The Wizard of Oz was a big part of that. Every year we would gather around our black and white TV and get utterly absorbed in that wonderful film.
Our guest before, well, we had a caller in that said that he was 19 when he found out that the movie was half color and half black and white. What was your reaction when you found that out? Do you remember?
Color television in the early 60s was really unusual, and only the extremely well-heeled enjoyed it at that time.
Now, did you read the books too, Peter?
I read the book.
Okay, the first one.
And I liked it well enough. You know, the honest truth is that I found the language kind of archaic. I read it once when I was a child, and then once when I was doing research for this book, which is really all about the film.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, it's relevant to understand, to read the book, and I read biographies of Baum to understand who he was and what he was doing. And I like the book okay, but it doesn't have the effect on me that the film has.
And I don't think that the book has weathered time as well as the movie has. Do you maybe agree with
that? I think that's true. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I mean, we have to give Baum a ton of credit.
The
ideas are his.
Mm-hmm.
But the film does something that the book does not. And I think whether by accident or intent, what the film does in making Oz a dream really adds depth and richness and allows us to kind of tap into the unconscious mind and into the collective unconscious, which lies below the unconscious mind. It's the unconscious mind that we all share.
Sure.
And then we can dip into that for insights into the film, which is kind of fantastic.
Right, because that is one area where it is different from the book in that there's no dream. Dorothy doesn't wake up. There's no field hands that are the wizard and whatnot.
Absolutely
So that is different.
Yes, absolutely mm-hmm. right.
Now, you have a really great story about how this book came into being. Can you share that with the listeners?
Sure. So I'm a book editor, and I worked for many years in New York, and then I moved to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and became an independent editor. So when publishers have big projects they need help with, they get in touch. But I go to New York a couple of times a year to just keep my contacts fresh, and I have a lot of good friends in publishing. And one day, this was about 5 years ago, I was in New York making my rounds, and I went to HarperCollins, and I noticed on the publisher's shelf this huge kind of oversized book. It was the 75th anniversary edition of The Wizard of Oz. And there is Dorothy in that blue and white checked gingham dress. You got Judy Garland's face with that look of wonderment when she's stepping out into Oz, that incredible look on her face. And for some reason, just something clicked. And I had this thought that all of these people that I've rubbed elbows with, all of these brilliant people that I've worked with over all the years, whatever I learned from them was right there in that film that I watched when I was 11 years old. I just had to go on this 40-year journey to kind of figure that out. Just like Dorothy went on her journey. Figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So what else did you do to prepare to write the book? You talked about reading some histories and biographies. Anything else?
Yes. I read, and there's some wonderful books out there. Did you know that Salman Rushdie wrote a book about The Wizard of Oz?
Now that you say that, I do remember hearing something about it, but yeah, wow.
And it's extraordinary, yeah. Just like you would expect from a Nobel Prize winning writer. It's brilliant and funny and opinionated, and I laughed out loud a lot. And there are lots of brilliant books that have been written about both the film and the book and Baum. So I dipped into all of that. But mostly what I did was kind of parse the film kind of frame by frame, you know, watch it over and over and over again on the hunt for wisdom. So now I've got to deliver on this idea that everything I ever learned is in this book. And so what is it? And what wisdom is there that might surprise me or things I didn't expect? So I went on this search, which ended up taking about 5 years, if you can believe it.
Oh, I do believe that, because there is a lot of information out there to go through. Now, we have got, Peter, a guest, a caller on the line, so he has something to add to the conversation. Let's give him a chance. Dan in
sure.
Franksville, what do you have?
Oh, I was working in a foundry back in the late 70s, and I still think about it today when I watch the movie. It seems like when you do the brain of the scarecrow and the heart, and I've been in other factories too. When I was really young too, so I started thinking, I think everyone's domesticated because you look at them on the machines and stuff like that, and it's like they don't have a brain no more. They just push buttons and stuff. You know, they're not dumb. They've just been basically turning the robots, and they and as far as the heart, they don't have much heart. It seems like no one in there really had much heart neither. It's like they were mechanized, and they would drink all weekend, just go back to work on Monday. And they'd even say that.
Okay.
The older guy would say that. And the courage part, I don't know if anyone really stood up for one another that much. They were sort of led around like with a ring in their nose like cattle. You know, not to be mean, not
right,
to degrade
right.
them.
Okay, all right.
When I was young, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. So what do you think, Peter? I know you do talk about that in your book.
Yeah, I think Dan's put his finger on something really important. I think that these three qualities are what make us human. And that in the absence of these qualities, we start to become more automated or more like automatons.
Mm-hmm.
But by exploring these qualities and how we can bring them into our lives, we become more and more human. And Dorothy, in her dream, kind of narrows it down to these three qualities, heart and brains and courage. And I think she made some really important choices when she did so.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the book itself. And how did you arrange the information in it?
Well, so I thought it would be kind of simplest, perhaps, to just arrange it along the narrative arc of the story. So the very first bit of insight that I found starts in Kansas, like the story starts.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, I'm furiously turning the pages of the book to find it. So the very first one is, there are no mistakes, only lessons. Because you might argue that Dorothy made a terrible mistake by letting her dog Toto run into Miss Gulch's garden and chase after her cat. Because that is going to set an absolute whirlwind of activity into motion. And Dorothy's going to lose her precious dog, and he's almost going to be taken off to be destroyed by Miss Gulch. And in the process, the story gets launched, and she gets struck in the head because she goes off, runs away with Toto. She's in a position when the cyclone hits she's exposed and she gets struck in the head, and she has the dream, which kind of drives is the narrative engine of the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have another caller. Let's just take them real quick. We've got Terry in Eau Claire. Hi, Terry.
Hi there. I just have a comment, and then I'll hang up and listen if I can.
Sure.
I had thought that the original book, Dorothy's slippers were made of silver. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes,
and then
that's right.
The Yellow Brick Road was gold, and the Wizard of Oz, OZ, is abbreviation for pounds. And I had thought that the book was some kind of a commentary about what was going to be used for the monetary base at that time, and the book was either silver or gold.
Okay.
I'm wondering if your research came up with any comments. So I'll hang up and listen, please.
Thanks, Terry. Peterhead, did you read anything about that?
Yes, and I think that's one of the incredible, any work of art is a work of art because we can look at it and we each get, a feeling if it's a painting, mm-hmm. if it's the Mona Lisa, and we each have an interpretation, and the Wizard of Oz qualifies for sure on that score. And many people have written books and dissertations and come up with all kinds of interpretations, including the one about the gold standard. And many of them are just simply subjective ideas. And some of them have some connection to Baum for sure. For example, the thing that we know about him, he wrote a letter to his publisher in which he said that he got the idea for the name Oz from looking at his file cabinet, and part of it was organized from O to Z, and that gave him the idea. But even so, we're just taking his word for it. He could have made it up. He was a great storyteller.
He made up a lot of things, yes. Definitely. So what are some of your favorite lessons that you learned from The Wizard of Oz?
Well, I was digging through the film, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I found all these kind of smaller insights like the one I described. And then while my shovel was digging into the film, it kind of went like clink. And I hit like this big honking chunk of wisdom. And this happened 9 times in the course of my excavation. And at some point I thought to myself, why don't I pull out these 9 items that I call emeralds of wisdom, these
uh-huh.
big chunks of insight, and see if they, and kind of look at them as a body. And I came up with this, I got this kind of hit, which is that they work as a circuit. If you run through them, and you take whatever issue you might be facing, I mean, you've just had an upsetting argument with your life partner, or your teenager has just stormed out of the house and you kind of don't know what to do. Well, you have a big job interview, or you've got your year-end review with your boss, and you've got some big kind of life event that you're facing, or just a small upsetting life event. When you run through the 9 emeralds, it gives you the effect that it gave Dorothy over the course of the movie. She goes from feeling helpless to feeling kind of calm and centered. She goes from feeling frightened to a sense of courage. She goes from kind of feeling lost and confused to becoming kind of deeply aware of herself and the fact that home is actually a place inside herself. So I thought, wow, I kind of discovered this kind of wonderful self-help tool buried in The Wizard of Oz. And I've started using it in my life, and my friends and family are using it in theirs. And now readers are starting to use it and getting in touch. The book was just released, and
yes.
getting in touch mm-hmm. and saying, wow, the emeralds are doing really cool things for me. So it's just incredibly exciting for me as a first-time author to have this experience.
Oh, that's wonderful. We'll talk a little bit more about those emeralds with our guest, Peter Gazzardi. His new book is called Emeralds of Oz, Life Lessons from Over the Rainbow. What's your favorite scene in the movie? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. We'll be back right after this look at the news.
Because of the wonderful things he does, we're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do?
Why, if I had a brain, I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain. I'd unravel every riddle.
Well, another favorite from the movie The Wizard of Oz. We're talking about what you can actually learn from that movie. Hi, I'm Joan Ledeau, in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Peter Gazzardi. He has worked in publishing for more than 40 years as an independent editor and writer, and his new book is called Emeralds of Oz, Life Lessons from Over the Rainbow. Are you an Oz fan? What impact did it have on your life? Did you introduce your children or grandchildren to it? What was their reaction like? Join in by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Peter, that song, is that one of your favorites?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's fascinating to imagine, you know, if you could be a character in The Wizard of Oz, who would you pick?
Yeah.
And for me, it's the Scarecrow, hands down.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got to think about that one.
I don't know.
I kind of like Glinda myself, but, you know, I think it's the costume. Peter, Catherine called in, and she couldn't stay on the line, but she said she took a seminar and learned about a study that said while the witches and flying monkeys were scary, the real underlying terrifying thing about the movie was that Dorothy was lost and couldn't find her way home. Did you come across that in any of your research?
No, I think it's... I think that's absolutely right. And I think that's it's not so much a matter of research as what each of us experiences in watching the film. And I think that sense of being lost and kind of desperate to find home is really a deep longing in each of us. It kind of drives the whole story. The story begins, really, it takes wings when she starts to sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is a song about longing for that place inside ourselves that really is truly home, as she describes it, a place where troubles melt like lemon drops, she's besieged in this story. I mean, she's helpless and frightened, and people are taking advantage of her. And the people who are tasked with taking care of her, Aunt Em and Uncle Henry, aren't doing a very good job. And then she gets lost in Oz. So she's going through some really difficult stuff, which I think all of us resonate with profoundly.
Sure. Well, let's go to Kay. She's in Prairie du Chien, and she has a comment for us. Hi, Kay.
Well, hello. I am going on 69, and I can remember when we were younger, my mother seeing this at the movie theater, and she always liked it. And then us kids, we never missed a program. We never missed it whenever the Wizard of Oz came on TV. And I've just grown up with it, and there's so many things that you can learn from that, from that program. But it was just such a happy time. It reminded me a lot of the youth and the fascination and the imagination and the good and the bad and how you can overcome so many trials and stuff. And I guess I can't say enough good about it, but it was a very... If a person really thinks about it, it's a very psychologically good movie because it's got everything that you can just about imagine when it comes to feelings and emotions.
Right. Well, thank you, Kay, for that comment. Peter, you got to agree with that.
Oh, boy, I couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. Kay and I are just about exactly the same age. And I think for generations of people, it's still true today. Maybe not quite as intensely, but you know, when you watch it year in and year out and you're young, all of the lessons in the film, you don't know it. You know, the film is so entertaining that it's not like you feel like you're in school and somebody's cudgeling you to memorize something. Far from it. But the lessons are still getting through. And I think that each of us who's watched the film, especially if you've done it many times, all of that wisdom is actually has been absorbed at a cellular level. I mean, you've got it in your bones.
Yep.
And it's just a matter of becoming aware of it. Mm-hmm. And then that wisdom gets activated in your life and can do wonderful things for your life.
Now, I think one of the best lessons to come from this story is that we already possess what we desire most. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, that's a great one. That's Emerald number 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I think that there is, Kay talked a little bit about psychology. I think the 9 emeralds that I've found, when you read these, you'll find that some of them are really feel natural to you. And, oh, yes, I get that one. Mm-hmm. And then others you kind of struggle with. It's like, like I know that's true, but I'm not sure. What I have found is that this particular emerald is the one I always forget. And I've learned enough about psychology to know that if you constantly forget something, that's really significant.
Yes, it is.
It tells you something. And in my case, realizing that you already possess what you desire most is really difficult because I am a person who has struggled with anxiety and panic attacks kind of all my life. And really, what I desire most is courage. And this emerald is an invitation for me to examine the fact that I already possess courage. I already possess that thing that I long for most, and to go and find it in myself. And when I do, and it's there, of course, it's there in all of us. All of these qualities are in us. When I do, and I think about it and nurture it, it brings it more and more to the fore in my life where it is more accessible to me. So this is a really rich emerald for me personally and for anyone who might be struggling with, and we all do to some extent, with the same issue as the scarecrow, which is the scarecrow's desperate for brains. But look how smart he is.
Yeah.
Look how clever and resourceful he is. And you and I are the same way. We've just gotten turned around about who we are and confused. And this emerald invites us to sort that out and realize that whatever we desire most, we already possess.
And one of the other things you brought up I thought was interesting is how laughter and fear work together.
Well, they do and they don't. In fact, they are anathema to each other. You cannot try this. Try being afraid and laughing at the same time. I mean, it just can't happen. And that's one of the beautiful ironies when you look at the Cowardly Lion. He is so funny. Bert Lahr is so outrageously funny. His songs are so slapstick and wonderful that he makes you laugh. You can't help it. And when you laugh, any fear you might be feeling is just evaporates.
Mm-hmm.
Fear and humor cannot coexist. So he's giving us, in a way, he's giving us a magic formula for dealing with fear. Laugh. Find something funny if you can. Have somebody crack a joke. There are other ways I talk about dealing with fear and anxiety in the book. But that's a great one.
Yes.
Humor is a wonderful antidote.
It certainly is. We now have another call. We've got Greg in Green Bay this time. Hi, Greg.
Greg,
are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just have a destination. If anybody happens to be traveling through Green Bay or lives in Green Bay, if you were to go underneath the Leo Frigel Bridge, which is Highway 43 that connects Green Bay to Milwaukee, if you were to go underneath that bridge, the concrete pillars, they rise up 30, 40 feet at least, but they have the same shape when you're underneath it. They have the same shape as the doors to the Land of Oz, as well as the corridor.
When
the corridor, it gives you that perspective.
Right, right. Well, thanks, Greg. So we're going to have lots. Yeah, we're going to have traffic backed up now. Looking for that.
Right.
Peter, have you found that Oz has influenced a lot of things in our everyday culture?
Oh, very much so. I mean, from The Wiz to, you know, books, it's constantly popping up.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed. Mm-hmm. Late night comedy hour. It's everywhere. And of course, it that has many reasons. I mean, if it is a classic, it is the most watched film of all time. By the way,
yeah, I read that, and that's amazing, isn't it?
It is, and it is 80 years old as of August. It celebrates its 80th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about some of the other emeralds in your book that we haven't talked about.
Sure. So the cool thing about the emeralds is that each one of them links to an iconic moment in the film, which makes them really easy to remember.
Yes.
So the first one is Dorothy starts to sing, and the first emerald is "Listen to your longing." Whatever obstacle you're facing in your life, start by centering yourself, not just what you want or what you need, which is important, but what do you long for? So here you are having a heated disagreement with your life partner. And take a moment, like, what do I long for? Well, really what I long for is to be connected to this person that I've spent so much of my life with. And so maybe I can set aside my need to be right in this moment in the greater service mm-hmm. of this connection, which is so meaningful to me. So that's the first one. Listen to your longing in any situation.
Uh-huh.
The second one, is the iconic moment is Dorothy stepping into Oz, right? The cover of the book that I described. And the lesson is see the situation as if for the first time. So here you are in that argument. Instead of thinking to yourself, I know how this is going to go. I know what this person's going to say. We've been around this so many times. This is an invitation to set aside what you think you know about whatever the situation is and just look at it as if you've never seen it before. And it kind of restores the sense of the miraculous. And it gives you a sense of, it gives you a moment to take your ego out of it. So what's really going on? A man and a woman are speaking with raised voices. Well, isn't that curious? You know, I wonder what's going to happen next. And you're no longer connected to the outcome. You can just look at it in this calm and dispassionate way, which is really beautiful. So that's the second one. The third one is connected to the moment when Dorothy lands and Glinda has just come. And all of a sudden, from out of the bushes, they're munchkins, hundreds of munchkins spring out of the bushes. And they're so excited. They're so thrilled because Dorothy, utterly by mistake, has landed on the Wicked Witch of the East, and freed the munchkins. So just by showing up, look at what Dorothy has accomplished. And the same is true for you. And the same is true for me. In whatever situation we're facing, just by showing up, we're making a difference. And it's an opportunity to celebrate yourself, like, woohoo! Give yourself a parade just for being here. It's so way cool that you're here.
Yeah, and there's so many people that feel uncomfortable being there. And they think there's so much pressure to, do something or to live up to some standards. But I like the fact that you're just saying, just for being there. You get a star just for going.
Gold star mm-hmm. just for showing up. The fourth one is, and this is a technique that Dorothy uses all along the Yellow Brick Road to great effect. It's choose compassion. Mm-hmm. So in whatever situation you're facing, choose compassion for the other parties involved. And then for yourself, like give yourself a break. And Dorothy, when she sees an odd scarecrow who talks, I mean, imagine that. What does she do? She says, "You look awfully uncomfortable. Like, how can I help?" And he says, well, if you bend that nail down, and she does, and he slips off the pole and becomes her loyal, devoted friend and ally who would risk his life for her and does.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens again and again. She meets a tin man who's rusted. She's all concerned about where the oil can is, right? How do I help?
Right.
Same is true of the cowardly lion. As soon as she realizes he's frightened, she says, why don't you join us? We're going to go see the wizard. Perhaps he can give you the courage that you long for. So she's all about compassion. And as a result, the obstacles she faces melt away and many of them become allies. So that's a huge lesson to each of us. The fifth one we've talked about already, realize that you already possess what you desire most. And this, of course, refers to the scarecrow and the tin man and the cowardly lion. They're desperate for these qualities that they already possess to such a degree that it's actually very funny to watch.
Yes, it is. We are actually getting a little short on time,
Peter.
Let's just take one more call real quick from Steve in Wales.
Sure.
Steve, what's your comment real quick?
Yeah, just real quick. You know, when I was a kid growing up, in central Illinois, it always played between Thanksgiving and December. It was a specific time.
Uh-huh.
And on that evening, my father always had this Christmas party we had to go to. So I never saw the end of The Wizard of Oz. I never knew how it ended.
Oh, that's terrible.
I never knew the witch melted. You know, I didn't know any of that. And until I was like 20 in college, and oh my gosh, I remember finding it out for the first time. I was amazed.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, well, Peter, it's been so much fun talking to you, and your book is just so lovely. Who's your audience for it?
I think honestly, there's a large market of people who are just interested in improving themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. There are people who are interested in The Wizard of Oz. So that's a great combination if you're interested in both. And there's also a spiritual that I think the book, the film has a deeply spiritual component. So people who are spiritual seekers are also going to find a lot in the book as well.
Well, I agree. And it's a wonderful gift to give to someone who has, you know, like you said, is a fan base or just likes these kinds of books. They'll really enjoy it. Good luck with it, Peter. And thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, Jill.
You're welcome. We've been talking with Peter Gonzari. His new book is called Emeralds of Oz, Life Lessons from Over the Rainbow. Join us on Garden Talk tomorrow. Melinda Myers will be back with us to talk about how to manage water in your garden. That's Friday at 11, Saturday morning at 6, and online anytime. Now, you may not be traveling to Oz this weekend, but odds are you will be traveling. And we are just so lucky to live in a state where there is so much to do. And we're contacted many times throughout the year here to help promote some of the great events in our state. But for one reason or another, we can't help them out. So we thought it would be fun to compile a short list of cool things to do, give the events a little publicity, and tell you about it on the last Friday of every month. Now, before you call in to tell us, we know this is not the last Thursday, but because it's Memorial Day weekend, we wanted to get it out to you a little early. This segment is going to be called Time Out Wisconsin, and we'll try to feature 5 or 6 events from all over the state, and in the future, maybe talk firsthand to some of the people involved in it. And of course, we would love to hear about your events, so please send us information at timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org. That's timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org. So hope you can send us some of those. Here are some of the upcoming events that you may want to check out. On Saturday, May 25th, from 10 to 4, there'll be a gathering of warbirds at the Waukesha County Airport. Korean War and World War II era aircraft will be in the air and on the ground. This is a family-friendly event featuring historic and modern military aircraft, aircraft tours and rides, and education activities for all ages. It will cost you $20 per carload, so pack them in. That includes parking and gate fee for everyone in the vehicle. FYI, pets are not allowed at the event. For more information, go to the Commemorative Air Force Wisconsin Wing website. That's CAFWI.org. If you're in the northern part of the state on Saturday, you can take part in the Northern Pike Challenge in Hayward. This one-day Northern Pike fishing tournament is held on Callahan Lake and Mud Lake, and there is a $5 entry fee, and children are encouraged to enter. All the proceeds will be donated to the effort to eradicate the Eurasian milfoil on Callahan and Mud Lake. Rules and regulations can be found on the haywardlakes.com website. Twice a year, on Memorial Day and Labor Day, the Ho-Chunk welcome all friends and neighbors to attend their powwow, held as a celebration of thanks. It takes place on the powwow grounds in Black River Falls. It's a time to gather and enjoy drums, dancing, and a wide variety of crafts from vendors across the country. It's open to the public for no cost, and there is free parking. For more information, go to ho-nation.org. On the following weekend in Manitowish Waters, you can attend the Northwoods Birding Festival. That's hosted by the North Lakeland Discovery Center Bird Club and Discovery Center. It's peak wobbler migration time, so events include sunrise wobbler walks, field trips to local birding hotspots, and you can try your hand at bird banding and learn from experts in the field of ornithology on topics ranging from how to improve your garden and woodlot to the benefits for birds and to the greater prairie chickens of Wisconsin. This year's keynote speaker is Michael Edmonds, award-winning author and historian and guest of The Larry Mueller Show, who will discuss the topic of his most recent book, Taking Flight, A History of People and Birds in the Heart of America. Coming up on June 8th in Manitowoc Two Rivers area, you can enjoy the Write and Like Tour 2019 along the shore with Frank Lloyd Wright and friends. The event features guided interior tours of private homes and public buildings by Frank Lloyd Wright and his contemporaries. Hamilton Wood Type and Printing Museum in Two Rivers will be the tour headquarters. You can find out more by going to writeinwisconsin.org. And if you're in the southern part of the state, on Father's Day weekend, head over to Monroe for the Balloon and Blues Fest. They bill it as Hot Air, Hot Blues, and Hot and Cool Brews. Gates open at 5 on Friday with a balloon launch at 6. There will be demonstrations of the balloon and the balloon glow on the infields and the fairgrounds. Lots of blues bands. And the next day, there's going to be a morning balloon launch, a pancake breakfast, arts and crafts fair, and car show, and four great blues bands. Well, this is just a very few of the many events taking place around the state in the next few weeks. If you have an event you'd like to tell us about, email us at timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org and find links to the event we talked about today on wpr.org/timeout. I'm Jill Nadeau. Next month, we'll be back again. Explore, dream, and discover.